generally, it's because they are supposed to seek what's called most favored customer. However, generally, it's most favored customer under similar terms and conditions. And since the GSA schedules don't guarantee any sales, often it is the most favorable price for a quantity of one. So it's a most favorable retail price. And GSA has said, and the government says, that people should be negotiating discounts for quantity purchases. And there are lots of ways to do that: BPAs, spot discounts, e-buy, reverse auctioning, and so forth. And that's in the regs and in the guidance and so forth. But I think this word, this most favored customer word, lulls a lot of contracting officials into the idea that GSA price, that list price there, is the best price, and they don't need to go any further.
And what I always heard was that the scheduled contract, that was the starting price for a negotiation, is what I thought. That was sort of conventional wisdom.
Well, I want it to become the conventional wisdom. It should be the conventional wisdom. It should be the starting price. However, you know, GAO issued a report about a year ago, which was actually pretty shocking, I got to say. And Dan Gordon and the Obama administration have tried to deal with it. But GAO issued a report about a year ago that even on agency BPAs, blanket purchase agreements, which are commitments to buy, and where the government really should be getting very significant discounts off the GSA schedules. I mean, often I think you can get 25% or even sometimes more discounts off the GSA schedules on a well-negotiated BPA, that in half or so of the random sample of BPAs, and these are BPAs, you know, major buys that GAO looked at, the agency had negotiated no discounts off the GSA schedule.
So, wow.
And that's on BPAs. So imagine what's happening, you know, for a spot buy of, you know, of 30 computers or 50 computers, not even a BPA. So, Chris, I think my goal in writing the blog was to say this phrase, most favored customer, is lulling a lot of contracting people. We need to get to a world where it is the conventional wisdom that it's a starting off point. Unfortunately, that's not the case now.
And we and that raises the whole question of this price reduction clause, the infamous boogeyman, the price reduction clause, where folks go back. I mean, industry despises this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the theory is that you can then, my words, not theirs, of course, you can almost micromanage prices. And I always thought that the idea of the schedules was to have as big a market as possible and allow competition. All of a sudden, you have a real government marketplace where competition can really drive down prices.
Yeah, I think the win-win solution here, there are two versions of this price reduction clause. There was one price reduction clause that used to exist before the 90s that said a schedule vendor could not offer a temporary discount off the GSA schedules. That is, if they lowered their schedule price for one customer, they had to lower it for everybody. And that made it impossible to do BPAs, to do negotiations, do further competition, because schedule vendors were not willing to give quantity discounts or temporary reductions or whatever. That was eliminated in the 90s, and that allowed, that set made it possible to negotiate these discounts. So that's the good news. What the vendors are concerned about is there still is a different kind of price reduction clause, which is that if during the life of the schedule you lower your price under however most favored customer is defined, which I think is often the best price for quantity of one, to any other customer, you have to lower your GSA schedule price, and then that is subject to audit and false claims and all the whole regulatory sometimes criminal in environment. That's what the vendors don't like. I think that the win-win here is if we can get to a situation where, use your words, it's the conventional wisdom. Not that, by the way, I don't want to exaggerate here. There are certainly many agencies and many situations where discounts are negotiated. I'm just concerned that there are really a lot where the government is not negotiating discounts where it should. But if we can get to a situation where the government is routinely getting discounts off of those scheduled prices for any kind of quantity buy, then I would certainly be in favor of removing any of these sort of criminal or false claims kinds of penalties for violations on not informing GSA that you may have lowered a price somewhere. And I think I'd still leave it, my personal view, I'd still leave in the clause, but I wouldn't put in the same kind of draconian penalties on it. Certainly if I feel that the government is routinely getting discounts anyway, and the market, as you say, Chris, as always, we're on the same page. Actually, you should just interview yourself, probably. But at any rate, if we get to a situation where competition is driving down those schedule prices, and then the schedule, you know, it then plays its role of being, you know, if you do have some sort of unusual need for a quantity of one, and also the other great virtue of the schedule is they're pre-negotiated. So the terms and conditions are set. You don't have to contract, so you can use it as a basis for BPAs and for further discounts. Then I think the system is working well, and I would certainly then in favor moving away from these very draconian penalties on the price reduction clause.
Well, the fear out there, at least on industry side, is that when you're going after folks like Oracle, and not that if they did something wrong, they ought to go after them. But it does have almost a chilling effect on the government market. That's the fear, is that all of a sudden people, particularly I think it impacts small and medium sized businesses, who simply say, I don't need the government market that bad, or even large companies decide to just go through integrators, which can make it more expensive.
Right. I mean, I think the fear on industry's part is that some auditor will find some salesman in Wichita, Kansas, who gave a price reduction to some customer to get, their business, get a first buy from the company or something, and that then is going to drive the whole GSA price, and that if they don't catch what this salesperson in Wichita, Kansas is doing, the next thing they know, they're going to have the Justice Department get on them. And that's a fair concern on industry's part.
Let me just quickly ask you, because you had another post talking about the pulse of contracting professionals. You were at a World Congress of the National Contract Management Association. What's your sense of how contractors, contracting managers, a group that's been under a lot of pressure, a lot of strain in recent years?
Interesting question. I think, as I think you know, Chris, probably some of your listeners know, I'm a half full kind of guy, so I'm going to start with the glass half full part. I think that the worst of the toxic atmosphere of the last few years, the toxic media atmosphere, the toxic Hill atmosphere, which I think really fundamentally grew out of political conflicts over the war in Iraq and, partisan political conflicts that were then had some sort of collateral damage on the contracting system. I think the worst of that is over. I mean, you're not, the kind of toxic attacks on government career civil servants and on contractors, I think, have eased up a fair bit. I think that the management officials in the Obama administration, I think, are not buying into the strike fear into the heart of people atmosphere.
Well, even some of the groups that had been, or just they seem to have mellowed out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
even coming up with solutions for things, which I don't mind criticisms as long as you come up with solutions to those problems too.
Right, I agree.
And killing all the contractors, I don't think is a solution.
I think they have mellowed a bit. So I think that the other good news is, I guess I'm going to have to get to the glass half empty because I did say I'm a half full guy, but that also means there's something empty. But the other good news is we have turned the corner on hiring for the contracting workforce in the government, which is, we had before this real vicious cycle where people were very short-staffed. They made mistakes because they were short-staffed. The mistakes got skewered in the media, and then they introduced more controls, more reviews, and so forth, which took up more time, so people had even less time to do their jobs, so that encouraged even more mistakes, and you got into this incredible vicious cycle.
Yeah.
I think we are moving, hopefully, out of that now with the new hiring. I mean, so that's the glass half full side. And I think, actually, to answer your question directly, what I would say is, from the government official side, from the contracting officer and contract specialist side, I think that the atmosphere has lightened up and there's not the same fear. I do think probably, I'm guessing, or my impression is that that is somewhat less so on the industry side, that the industry folks, if the level of beleagueredness 2 years ago was at 100 for both government and industry, I guess I'd put it down at about 60 or 70 now for the government. So down from 100 to 60 or 70. On the contractors, maybe only down to 85 or 90. So it's down a bit, but now they're still feeling a little bit more beleaguered, I think.
Let me ask you one last question, because I know you're literally rushing off to catch a flight. You've been asked by Tech America to join Reni DiPentima and a sort of group of folks looking at a lot of these management proposals that have been put forward by OMB, specifically looking at tech issues and closing down systems. What do you hope to accomplish through this?
Yeah, we had actually our first meeting yesterday, and you know, my co-chair is Linda Gooden from Lockheed Martin, and then the two, I don't know what they're called, assistant co-chairs.
Yeah,
right. The first thing they did was set up a bureaucracy. Our Rennie and also Chris Eukins from GW Law School. So we had our first meeting yesterday, and it's a very it's a group that's mostly industry with the two academics. It's a very constructive effort by industry. Our basic starting off point is there have been a lot of recommendations that have been made in many cases for 20 years about things such as quick deliverables, don't do grand designs, do things in chunks, you know, more agile development. A whole bunch of recommendations like that in some cases have literally been made for 20 or sometimes 25 years.
Go back and read Raines' rules. Raines' rules is,
absolutely. You know. Raines' rules, Rennie's report when he was CIO of Social Security Administration, led a group of government CIOs. Some of these have been around for a really, really long time. Rather than just having another set of recommendations, which are the same as everybody else's recommendations, what we're going to center on is, and we're going to be actually doing some disciplined interviews with both on the government and industry side with doers, people who are, you know, program managers, and people below them, mid-level managers, customers, users, stuff like that, to try to find, okay, here are these proposals that are out there. What are the barriers to actually making them happen?
Why is this so hard to do?
To overcome those barriers. So we're going to be very execution and implementation oriented. And just to give you an example, because it came up at the meeting yesterday, and this is not, I don't want to say this is going to necessarily be in the report, but it was an interesting, it taught me, somebody brought it up at the meeting yesterday. You know, everybody's saying we need agile, short deliverables, yet does the OMB 300 process and the capital planning process require you to say what you are going to accomplish for the next 10 years and drive people into these 10-year deliverable cycles, for example? Or does our milestone and oversight review, do we have so many milestones, or let me rephrase that, is the milestone and oversight review so onerous that people want to reduce them to an absolute minimum so they don't want to have constant deliverables because they're afraid of a new oversight cycle each time? So those are the, without saying we're going to say that we need to learn more before we make those suggestions, but we are going to be very focused. We're going to be very constructive, number one. Number two, even though it's an industry group, in fact, especially because it's an industry group, we're going to discuss what does industry need to change, not just what does the government need to change. And we're going to be very constructive and practical, and above all, very execution, what's needed to make some of these things happen, oriented. So stay tuned.